The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but Christians are always warning you about one thing or another. There's always something. Many of them even come to you with conspiracy theories. Well, let me tell you something, my friend. I don't like conspiracy theories either. As a Christian, I dismiss them all the time. Conspiracy theories are ridiculous because they're examples of the most circular kind of reasoning. The less evidence a person shows, the more it supposedly supports the idea that the conspiracy is valid. They go, well, after all, a good conspiracy will leave no trail, or it couldn't be a conspiracy, could it? All right. Well, today we are here to talk not about conspiracies, but the direction of our country plain to the naked eye. That is, plain to any eye that truly wishes to see. Often people do not want to see. But, you know, they say that if you listen to an evil person long enough, sooner or later he'll tell you just exactly what he's planning to do. And here to help with the discussion is one of our regular rotating co-hosts on the Bob Siegel Show, Matt Simone. Matt, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, Bob.
What have you got in your bag of tricks for us today?
Well, Bob, you know,
just tell us it's not a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, we're really going to have some fun today, I believe. And I think we have some very good information that people can actually verify. So to segue,
so you're going to confuse people with the facts.
Yeah. We're actually going to try and use some facts today.
That should be a whole new experience for
many
people.
Yeah. So here's what's going to happen today. So since it's Memorial Day weekend, I thought we'd sort of segue into it with a couple quotes that'll sort of lead us into our discussion.
Okay.
The first one is from Francis A. Walker, and he says this: "We come not to mourn our dead soldiers, but to praise them." Joseph Campbell said, "A hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself." Schuyler Colfax said this: "The martyrs of patriotism give their lives for an idea." So what is the idea that we're going to talk about today? Well, Superman said it best. He fights for truth, justice, and the American way.
Wait. Now, in the last Superman movie, they took out the American way part.
They sure did. Yeah.
Well, politically correct, new improved Superman.
But we're bringing it back.
We're bringing it back because it belongs in there.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look or a snapshot of what America looks like today. So I have some random facts that I just like to throw out there for you so you can see what our country sort of looks like today. So for the first time in U.S. history, there are more than 40 million Americans that are on food stamps. The U.S., in the United States, the average federal worker now earns about twice as much as the average worker in the private sector. Back in 1950, each retiree under Social Security had 16 workers paying for those benefits. Today, 3.3. By the year 2025, it's going to be 2 workers for each retiree. The U.S. government has declared some parts of Arizona off limits to U.S. citizens because of the threat of violence from Mexican drug smugglers. Can you believe this? In Florida, students have been arrested by the police for things as simple as bringing a plastic butter knife to school, throwing an eraser, and drawing a picture of a gun.
And yet, when you look at all the violence associated with Occupy Wall Street, and some people have been arrested there, but far too many have not been arrested when they're out doing real violence, not with a butter knife.
Yeah, or a picture. How about it? When's the last time? I guess those paper cuts can get pretty violent. Let's take a look at another one. Do you believe this one? School officials in one town in Massachusetts are refusing to allow students to recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
And what's the reason for that? It's offensive to somebody who doesn't.
It's offensive. And what they're trying
to. It's offensive to somebody who supposedly is also an American citizen.
You would think so, but.
I don't think we should be making people recite the pledge either. I don't think we should be making people do anything, but to be offended because somebody else wants to recite it?
Well, you know, it seems we're pushing this agenda. Have you ever heard about the World Pledge? There's an actual world.
Well, that gets back to this idea of international law and talking about one global village and
right.
everything.
Absolutely. And I have it here, but I'm not going to waste the time. But just Google World Pledge, and you'll see exactly what they're talking about. But here's something else I'd like to make the audience keenly aware of. If you've never seen it, you need to Google Red Skelton. Now, that's the famous comedian. Red Skelton.
Yeah, from the 60s.
Exactly.
He had that variety show on TV.
Absolutely. And on one of those variety shows, he did a Pledge of Allegiance that will knock your socks off. He knows what the Pledge of Allegiance is all about. And he learned it from one of his schoolmasters when he was actually in school.
Those were in the days when in Hollywood you could love your country and still be cool.
Yeah, I guess it works. We live in a time right now when the first woman presidential candidate in 2008 talked about how degrading it is to be a stay-at-home mom. Businesses are closing down because of environmental regulations. Legislation is being considered all across the United States to oppose that won't let anybody discuss in public anything in regard to homosexual lifestyles.
Or at least you can't discuss it in a derogatory way.
Exactly.
You can discuss it in a supportive way.
Absolutely. But you can't oppose it in any fashion.
No, in fact, there's a law in California now where at least in the public schools, and I believe anybody who's a public official of California with a forum, you're not allowed to say anything derogatory about the gay lifestyle. Now.
Right. And that would be SB 48.
SB 48 says you have to go and include it in the history curriculum. I would think that anybody, regardless of your position on same-sex marriage, and I can respect you if you have a different position than mine, I would think that anybody would be concerned and would view this as an affront to free speech. You would wish.
You would wish. You would wish that. But like I said, Bob, and you pointed out a lot of times on the show here, all we're trying to do is have a forum for a civil discussion with people.
Because if people could at least talk about something, they can see both sides of it, they might, maybe their viewpoint will change all on their own. But if not, at least they'll know what they're truly disagreeing with.
Absolutely. Let's give you a couple more facts. 19 million new cases of sexually transmitted diseases happen every year. We have an educational system that teaches everything is relative and there's no right and wrong.
Unless they're talking about Republicans and the evil George Bush, then they do believe in right and wrong.
Right. And, you know, they have an amazingly great memory, isn't it? Let's talk about youth suicide. Right now, youth suicide is the third leading cause of death.
Is it still mostly in high school age?
Yeah,
mostly. And I know college age a lot, too.
Colleges, it's like the number two killer.
And some middle schooler ages, too,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, the stats are like for every 10th youth, there's 10 youth suicides for every 100,000 kids. Wow. So that's amazing right there.
And yet religion... bringing people to a relationship with God and Christ, which could curtail some of that, we don't allow in our schools. I'm not trying to oversimplify what can be a complex problem, but that could be very, very helpful for somebody to know that there's a God who created them, who loves them specially, and yet we don't even want to allow a discussion of that in the public schools.
I would like anything that would bring people to the clarity and know there is actually an ultimate truth.
Yeah,
that would be great. How about this one? You think the U.S. Economy is bad? Let's consider this fact from the National Inflation Association. Even if all U.S. citizens were taxed 100% of their income, it would still not be enough to balance the federal budget. We would still have to borrow money just to maintain the status quo.
And you know what? Even if taxing people at 100% did help, people don't seem to understand that a parasite can't survive if it doesn't leave the host alive. You know, it doesn't work that way.
And that's pretty much where we're going to be headed. How about two more? Let's just finish it up with this. February of 2012, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Ginsburg insulted the United States Constitution.
Oh, this Egypt thing.
Yep, and said that Egypt should look someplace else for the drafting of its constitution. And this person was appointed to respect and be the final authority in regard to what our constitution
is. To make the understatement of the year, I have a serious problem with that because our Constitution is being interpreted quote unquote, by somebody who doesn't even believe in the Constitution, which means she's not going to interpret it. She's going to make up the laws as she goes, legislate from the bench, and then try to package it as an interpretation.
That's exactly it.
In fact, she was the one who said that the Constitution gives us the right to not be offended. What the heck is the First Amendment? If all speech was always going to be benign and never offend anybody, why did our forefathers think they needed to protect it? Doesn't it make you want to just go bang your head against the wall?
Well, there's those inconsistencies again.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's finish up
with this. We did a whole show on inconsistencies the last time Matt was on.
Well, let's how about this for a final one? And our current president of the United States has evolved and now is supporting same-sex
marriage.
Yes,
but when a Republican changes his position, he hasn't evolved. He's flip-flop. We need to get the lingo down right.
Right.
Democrats evolve. Republicans flip-flop. Those are the rules.
So here's the question we have today. How did this happen? How did we get here? Well, Bob, here it is. Here's the reveal right now.
All right.
One word. Wait for
stupidity.
It. Here it comes. That's
gullibility. Brainwashing. Good, are those some of the words?
That's a pretty good word. Well, the word is Marxism.
Yeah, now I see. Now, and I know that when we say that, a lot of people are going to go, oh, they're being alarmist, and they're going to think it is a conspiracy theory. But please pay careful attention, because Matt's going to connect some dots. He is going to give you facts. He's not just going to be screaming Marxism. You need to, people that resist using a label like Marxism probably don't even know what Marxism is.
That's exactly it. And so what we're going to do now is I just want to sort of let you know, yeah, I know that communism to most people is dead. I know that the Berlin Wall is down, and communism is sort of fallen out of favor as a word we use. But what I am going to try and postulate today is that over the last 50 years, there has been a checklist of actual plan or an agenda that the Communist Party actually put in writing that they were going to try and bring down the United States internally.
Well, and the communists are smart enough to know that they don't have to use the word communist. If communism has become a bad word, they could start using a nicer word like the word progressive, perhaps.
Absolutely. And we're going to get to those things because that's what's happening. And Bob has just pointed out is we have a really good way of spinning things and repackaging things in this day and age.
This was the prediction of George Orwell in his novel 1984 that we would change the way we talk, change our terms to nullify the effects of our actions.
So the things that they've been using are homosexual rights, extremist environmentalism, government growth, promotion of obscenity and immorality, the increased availability of abortion, feminism, and the Marxist domination of our public school system.
Now, Matt, am I correct in assuming that you would say that the pure Marxist may not care about those particular causes so much as they're using them as an excuse so that they feel that the sincere people that get involved in those causes are what they would call useful idiots?
That's exactly what we're going to get to, Bob. You hit it right on the head.
All right. Matt Simone and Bob Siegel here. Marxism. And listen, I know that a lot of you out there voted for Obama. I have a lot of Christian, evangelical Christians who voted for Obama because they thought, well, he talks about compassion. And I know you're a compassionate person. I know you meant well. We're not doing this to clobber you on the head, but maybe you could understand the gravity and the result of what your vote did last time, and maybe we can educate you a little bit. We'll be right back.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life, but Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Simone.
Okay, Bob, so we're going to jump back into this, and what we're going to do is we're going to define some words, and I'm going to try and keep it real short and simple. We are going to use words like communism, socialism, Marxism, progressivism.
Wasn't it Ferris Bueller who at the beginning of the movie said, I don't like isms?
Exactly.
Because they have nothing to do with the fact that I don't own my own car? That's one of my favorite movies.
You know, that, you know, it's amazing. I, you know, I've been around Bob quite a bit, and you wouldn't be surprised how many times he can actually quote that movie. It's pretty interesting.
It's a, it was a comedy, but it was very profound. We'll have to do a review show about that, but we digress. On to the isms.
Okay, so here we go. So communism, socialism, Marxism, they're sort of interrelated. Marx actually believed that socialism was somewhere in the middle between capitalism and communism. So let's give you a quick, dirty definition of socialism. And it's basically there is no classes, there's no class distinction, and everybody owns a mean of production as a collective. Okay, that would be socialism.
And then communism would be a more advanced form of socialism,
absolutely,
right?
A more aggressive form where basically everything is centralized in the government or in the party, and they control everything.
And there might be a little bit of free sector left. A lot of absolutely. Our nations today that call themselves socialistic still have elements of capitalism, but they'd be completely removed in a communist government.
Absolutely. Now let's go to the word progressivism. A progressive, more along the lines of what we would call more of a liberal. At its core, they accept the world as dynamic. In other words, there's really no hard and fast set rules. American progressivism tends to support things like income redistribution. They support organized labor, trade unions.
Now, that's really the same as socialism, though.
Yeah, it is.
Haven't they just found a nicer word? I mean, nobody wants to say I'm not progressive because that makes them sound backwoods and behind the times. So progressives are really nice sounding word.
They are.
But it basically means the same as being a socialist.
Absolutely. Their ultimate goal is to introduce a living wage. And if you're not familiar with that, all you have to do is look to countries like Greece, where you get to retire at 52 years old and everybody gets their health care.
Except that everybody's not getting it now, and they're burning the city down and turning cars over.
And they would also support the creation of something like universal health care. So let's see. Income redistribution, universal health care, nationalization of the economy through our banks, centralized government, and a drive to destroy the free market capitalist system, which our nation was built upon. Is this the Democratic Party?
Yeah, and you know what? Things like universal health care, that sounds good, but you need to understand, folks, that doesn't mean everybody's going to get good health care. It means some people have already been getting good health care, and to be fair, we've got to give everybody the same lousy, horrible, heinous health care so that we can be fair to everybody. That's the way it's getting equalized.
So how does this all play out? How did this Marxism start creeping in? Well, to make it real simple for you is this. Marxism had three particular objectives that they were trying to include in their plan. And the first one was to destroy the family. The second one was to destroy business. And the last one was to destroy our culture. Okay, now, Joseph Stalin said this. America is like a healthy body, and its resistance is threefold. It's patriotism, it's morality, and it's spiritual life. If we can undermine these three areas, America will collapse within. And that's exactly what they tried to do.
See, people would shudder today to think that they're cooperating with the philosophy of Joseph Stalin, but that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and those are the things we're going to show. So we're going to do a down and dirty quick history for you. We're going to start talking about the father of communism, and that's Karl Marx. And it all comes about with this communist manifesto that he actually put together.
And he was sincere in his own way. He really believed this nonsense.
Right, yeah. And
he thought it was going to save the world.
Right, and there were some lucid points in it, but the bottom line is this. There's the haves and the haves not. There's the proletariat, who are the working class. You have the bourgeoisie, who are the wealthy people. And the wealthy people are always taking advantage of the people who are
And it's a part workers. Truth, because yeah. There are some greedy, wealthy people that don't care about the poor. But that doesn't mean all wealthy people are like that. Many wealthy people give a lot to charity. And without wealthy people, we couldn't have businesses and we couldn't have jobs. So we'd have more poverty without wealth.
The necessary evil. So let's talk about this bourgeoisie. Well, what's going to happen is his theory was that the working class was going to basically revolt. And they were going to revolt against the bourgeoisie, and they were going to overthrow the system of capitalism. And after that, there'd be a brief period of dictatorship, And then ultimately, there would be this classless society of communism would emerge.
Now, that's exactly what happened in the Soviet Union, except the brief period of dictatorship did not end up being incredibly brief. It kind of stayed around forever.
Well, that's the problem with it, because if you read the Communist Manifesto and you take a look at it, Marx I don't think he was really sure how the end game was going to work anyway.
All they did was throw out one czar and put in another czar, but the new guy they didn't call the czar. They called him the head of the Workers' Party.
So he never gave any kind of ultimate result how the economy was going to work.
Well, the things look good on paper,
absolutely,
but it's out in the street where we live where we see how they really work.
And in that manifesto, one of the things that the manifesto actually defended were the following topics. The abolishment of the family, abolishment of a religion, socialization of education, abolishment of nations. Okay, does that sound currently what's going on today in the United States?
Well, it does, because religion's being regulated, and of course the family is under great assault with all the stuff about same-sex marriage. I mean, people would say, oh, we're for family, we're just for a different kind of family, but the traditional family is being obliterated right now.
Right, and let me just sum it all up in Marx's final words in his manifesto. It said this: in short, the communists everywhere support every revolutionary movement against the existing social and political order of things. And the interesting thing is, and I'm just going to throw this out there, and you guys do, you know, make up your mind, but if you go to the Democratic Party's website and take a look at the topics they're using, it doesn't sound a whole lot different than what we're talking about right now.
Now, we know that many of you are registered Democrats. And look, I've mentioned many times on the show, I myself am a registered Democrat. I haven't voted Democrat for years. But I know that a lot of people hold on to what the Democratic Party once was. So we're not claiming that every Democrat has this agenda. But those pulling the purse strings of the Democratic Party do have this agenda. And it's very important for you to understand that.
Because if you go to their website, one of the things you're going to take a look that they really don't place any value on Americans in general. They want to play the race and class warfare. They divide ethnic groups.
And Obama's playing that at every turn. That's his whole campaign platform.
Gender, special interest groups. It just goes on. If you guys want a glimpse of what communism's really about, it's probably not reading now that they have in high schools, but everybody should read Animal Farm. Animal Farm was a great
George Orwell brilliant novel.
Yeah, a great satire on actually what communism is all about. And it starts out really good. Somebody has power. Somebody's going to take that power away. But they know what? They find out, I really do like the power, so I'm going to just keep it.
Well, it's the old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. People who were once persecuted, when they get into power, tend to treat others the way they were once treated. It's a very unfortunate fact of history, but it happens again and again, and we should understand this.
So Marx, and I'm not going to bore you with this, but you know, there's a lot of this stuff you can find actually on the internet. If you just Google the Communist Manifesto, you can actually get a copy of it. And in that manifesto, he described 10 steps that are necessary to take down a free enterprise society.
And again, folks, please pay attention. This is not a conspiracy theory. These 10 steps you can look at because the communists freely admit them. And we're going to talk about a communist who was actually made one of Obama's czars, Van Jones. He got fired, but only because of some bad press and because people started listening to his speeches on the internet. This guy was doing nothing covert or discreet. He was a self-avowed, unashamed, admitted communist. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Matt Simone. Were you saying this was one of your first albums that you ever owned? Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass.
Yeah, love that.
A Taste of Honey. You got to love that.
Okay. All right. So let's start with this quote. Karl Marx said this: "My goal in life is to dethrone God and destroy capitalism." Now, out of this philosophy, I'm going to do a quick little thing for you. Two groups and one individual you definitely got to know about. The first one is called the Fabian Society. They were actually created in 1884, and their agenda was the socialism of the world by evolution and not revolution like Marx wanted. So basically, their contribution to today is social.
Slow it down and package it better?
Yeah, it's called social justice. So social justice is based on the concept of human rights, which involves a greater degree of economic equality.
And that sounds great.
Yes.
Equality, human rights, these are always nice sounding things.
Through progressive taxation, income redistribution, and even property redistribution. Now remember, this is their contribution, social justice. So remember that name, Fabian Society.
So we're looking at someone like Orwell who talked about how we change words. Redistribution is not a bad sounding word, but what it literally means is stealing. Thou shalt not steal. It means you're taking something that doesn't belong to you, that somebody else worked for, and just because you feel he has too much, you should give it to somebody else. But who's going to make that decision? Who are we to play God and decide what somebody else should be able to own when he went out and he worked for it himself?
Well, and that's why I think capitalism works. Let's talk about another person, Antonio Gramsci. Now, he was a founding member and one-time leader of the Communist Party of Italy. Now, this man was truly brilliant, Bob. He believed to destroy the West, you must destroy their culture. You could take down a Judeo-Christian culture from inside if you attack their moral values. You must penetrate the institutions of influence to change the people from within. So he actually believed that if you could break down the traditions, the beliefs, the morals of the will of the people, he decided that civilization had been through 2,000 years of Christianity. There had to be a way to destroy it. And it was going to come from within. And that was going to be the only way.
And that's been somewhat successful because we do have a lot of liberal churches where even pastors will get up and deny major portions of the Bible, or they'll reinterpret it.
And
they'll read the Bible the way Ginsburg reads the Constitution.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We could go on in detail, but I'd like you guys to write down a word, and I'd like you to look it up. And it's called cultural hegemony. H-E-G-E-M-O-N-Y. And basically, it's a philosophical and social theory where you can actually control people and get people to think what you want them to think and make them think that it's a good thing for them. I'm telling you, it's brainwashing.
And for those that are already brainwashed, what we're saying may not be making a big difference. Listen to those nutcases trying to take away this sound reasoning that I learned about in school.
Okay, and the last group I want you to know about is the Frankfurt School. Now, they were formed in Germany in 1923, and these guys are the forebearers of what we would call cultural Marxism, or more popularly today known as political correctness. These are the guys who basically thought that the United States had too much of a father figure in the family, and they, just like Marx, wanted to take away that father figure and wanted to make us more of a matriarchal society.
And look at all the young men we have running around without positive male role models in their lives right now.
Right. And so their attack really was in public education. The focus is no longer on core academic subjects, reading, writing, arithmetic, math, and science. Rather, the focus is in many public school districts on indoctrination, social engineering. What are they? Multiculturalism, social justice, diversity, moral relativism, political correctness, radical environmentalism.
And those are the attacks that a lot of people have against homeschooling and private schools, because a lot of those schools do great when you look at the national test scores. But what they're really complaining about is the indoctrinization, socialization. That's what's not going on there. And it drives people nuts that there's a little corner of the world that isn't under their control.
Well, you know, and that's probably a little known fact that when you send your kids to public school, you basically are authorizing the state to have total control of your children for those 8 hours.
And I should say, I know, and I'm sure Matt knows, many wonderful public school teachers that are doing a great job against incredible odds. But again, in isolated situations, we're always going to see exceptions to the rule, but we need to know what's going on at the top of the pyramid.
Vladimir Lenin said this: give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted. So let's take a look at something. And I'm really, these are real hard facts, people. And I'm just reading them that you can get the books yourself. But in 1958, there was this amazing FBI agent, and his name was Cleon Soskin, S-K-O-U-S-E-N. He wrote a book called The Naked Communist. I actually downloaded it. You can get it for free, and you can read it itself. He listed 45 goals of the Communist Party in 1958. I am going to read a couple of the 45, but listen to this. Number six, provide American aid to all nations regardless of communist domination. Number 15, capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. Use technical decisions of the court to weaken basic American institutions by claiming their activities violate civil rights. Get control of the schools. That's number 17. Number 20, infiltrate the press. Number 21, gain control of key positions in radio, TV, and motion pictures.
Golly, Matt, you think any of these have been successful? You think any of these might be happening today?
How about 24, eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press?
Yeah, and you need to understand that these people that are complaining that free speech and press is violated, once they take complete control, there will be no more free speech and free press. There practically isn't today.
Listen to this. Number 26, present homosexuality, promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. 27, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion.
There's a whole movement in the evangelical church today called the Emergent Church. We'll do a whole show on that sometime, but watch for that word, Emergent Church.
Number 28, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. This is 1958,
which, of course, it doesn't. There was prayer in all of the schools when the Constitution was written. That was not a concern of the forefathers at all.
Number 32, support any socialist movement to give centralized control over any part of the culture, education, social agencies, welfare programs, mental health clinics, etc. Number 36, infiltrate and gain control of more unions. Discredit the family. Number 40, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. And 41, emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents.
She sent a partridge in a pear tree. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And it's happening around us everywhere.
And that was 1958.
So what do we do about this, Matt?
Okay, well,
we'll have a few practical solutions, I hope.
I sure hope so.
Matt's going to paint more of a picture for us first, but then some practicality. We want to leave you with a little bit of hope. We'll be right back. Your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
When the truth is found, to be lies, and all the joy within you dies. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, co-hosted today by my good friend Matt Simone.
Okay, Bob, let's name some other players in the game here. I know this is getting
a little limited. It's a big baseball field. There's a lot of players in this game.
Okay, let's try this name. Some of you may have heard of it. His name is Saul Alinsky.
Yeah, now this is very important because there's a direct connection between him and our president of the United States. So take some time and really explain who Saul Alinsky is for everybody.
Okay, Saul Alinsky described himself basically as a rebel. And his entire life was devoted to organizing a revolution.
What were the years where he lived?
Oh,
because it wasn't
from,
that long ago.
It was 1909 to 1972. He died in 72.
So it wasn't that long ago that he passed away.
So his idea was to destroy a system he regarded as oppressive and unjust, which was the American way.
And he didn't care if it was a communist revolution. He just wanted some kind of revolution.
No. He was a community organizer and...
Community organizer. Yeah. That has kind of a ring to it. Man.
Yeah. A matter of fact, one of his famous disciples is Barack Obama. And we'll go into that a little bit later.
There were 12 disciples. There was Barack, Peter, James, you know.
Now, Alinsky, he took Gramsci and the Fabian Society, took their ideas, and he sort of repackaged them for the 60s radical. So basically, communism had fallen. All these people were sort of left out in the cold. And Alinsky, he really didn't care about the end. He just worried about the issue. The issue was the revolution. And because of that, he could bring everybody together because he never had an end game. He never had to worry about results. So communists would say, it's a socialist party. This one has an agenda. No, it was just about the revolution.
He believed that the process itself was keeping society alive.
Yeah, the issue is always the revolution. So if it was any about inner city blacks or women, it was never really the cause. He would advance any cause that would give him what? And that would be power. Their focus is on the means rather than the end. Within the framework of the revolutionary agenda, they're flexible, opportunistic, and they will say and pretend to be anything or say anything to get resources and power. That's what they would do. You organize for power. So it brings me back to the Beatles song, you know, in the White Album.
Revolution. Oh, the Revolution song.
Yeah, the Revolution song. Well, in the second verse, it says this. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we'd love to see the plan. And nobody had a plan. That was the amazing thing about it. But it just was bringing about this chaos. And the way they brought about some of this chaos was they would stigmatize people. They would label people. And it was always about defeating the other person. So they were playing by a totally different set of rules. Their rules for them was win at all costs, whereas we were having more of a rules like, hey, well, we should get together. We should find some common ground. We should work this stuff out, but not them. And then what they would do, they would take those rules that you have dedicated and you have dictated to them, and then they would use those rules against you and hammer you with your own rules because, see, it didn't work.
Okay, now can you connect the dots and show how our present administration has been taking the Alinsky method and putting it into effect?
Okay, let's sort of go with this. First of all, at the age of 23, Barack Obama was actually recruited by the Alinsky team to go into an inner city and actually apply the Alinsky method. And he actually, for a couple years, actually taught the actual Alinsky method to other people. So along that line, there are other people that came into his life. One of the people that I think is very important is a person named William Ayers.
Bill Ayers, who was a self-avowed, self-confessed terrorist.
Yeah. I mean, this man was.
Didn't he
bomb?
Was it the Capitol building or I think it was the Capitol building that he bombed. Yeah.
He was basically a communist. He was a terrorist, and he wrote a book that was called The Prairie Fire in 1974. And I mean, he flat out admitted it. It's right in there.
And
no quotes.
Obama's campaign, his early in politics, began in Bill Ayers' living room.
That's exactly.
So they're not just mild acquaintances, as Obama tried to. He tried to make it sound like, well, we served on a committee once. No, they were much closer. There's more of a connect than Obama's been letting on.
That's exactly it. And a matter of fact, if you do some research, some of the connection is this. Ayers and Obama worked together for years on a school reform program called the Chicago Annenberg Challenge. Ayers and Obama also served together on the board of a Woods Fund of Chicago, a separate charity organization. Obama had his political outcoming, like you said, with Ayers in his home. Ayers mentioned Obama by name in his book in 1997, mentioned that the two were very close neighbors. Obama gave a short, glowing review of that same book in the Chicago Tribune. And last but not least, Obama and Air were both presenters together on a panel about juvenile justice organized by who? Michelle Obama.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, at least they're keeping it in the family.
Yeah. So that's sort of how they fit together. Now, there's other players, too.
But then they've also been taking the strategies of Alinsky. What are some of the strategies that you've seen them put into place?
Well, the strategies that they've been putting into place is this.
The social warfare.
But there was another
class
key player.
Warfare.
There was another key player in the whole thing, and they were called the Coward Pivin, C-L-O-W-A-R-D, Coward-Pivin Strategy. And what that strategy was all about, they were actually from Columbia University, figuring where Obama went to college, too. So their idea was that we are going to stress and overwhelm the government system by just making demands on it. So what they were going to do is they were going to replace welfare system with a national system of guaranteed annual income and thus end poverty altogether. And by doing that, they were going to expand the voting rolls, the welfare rolls, and show social programs that ensured generational poverty.
And isn't the socialized health care just an excuse for redistribution of wealth, too? Isn't it really the same old skunk underneath?
Well, it would seem that. This is the agenda that you can see happening today that was postulated by this strategy. No matter what the strategy, where it was implemented, it shares the following features. And here it is. The offensive organization previously has unorganized groups. They make them eligible for government benefits that are not currently receiving, but they can receive. The second thing is the offensive seeks to identify new beneficiaries and or create new benefits.
And Matt, what percentage of our country is now under the grace of government benefits? I mean,
it's
almost
like
50%.
Entitlements is over 50%.
Which is very strategic because nobody wants to bite the hand that feeds them. So it's pretty guaranteed who they're going to vote for in the next election. They're not going to vote themselves out of a job.
I mean, think about it. Yeah, if you're working, like I said, we have the increase of government. We have the increase of people that are entitlements. What are people going to do when the economy is bad? They're going to vote their pockets.
So it's not just about compassion. There's a strategy to making people dependent on the government. It keeps people in power.
That's exactly it. And the last thing is, their aim is always to impose new stresses on the target system with the ultimate goal of forcing their collapse. So imagine this. They're saying, okay, let's organize all the people to make sure everybody maximizes their benefits. And if they don't have benefits, let's make benefits, which they could now get. And then then ultimately we're going to force a total collapse on the system because guess what? Somebody's got to pay for it. Not this generation, but the next generation. And as we know, based on population studies right now, there are just not enough people to make these systems
work. And
we're
seeing our future in Europe right now,
exactly.
In places like Greece.
Yes. You know, we can go on. Another organization that you guys are familiar with, ACORN, Association of Community Organizations Reform Now. Basically, they are now the largest grassroots community organization for low, moderate income people, with over 400,000 member families.
And they've been caught breaking the law many times. There was voter fraud. They were registering the name Mickey Mouse as a voter during the last election. Mickey Mouse.
That's exactly it. So what we have is, people, is the United States is sort of like the frog in the pot. You guys know the story of the frog in the pot?
The frog that's being boiled slowly rather than quickly. All right, well, we will quickly be back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with co-host Matt Simone. Now, Matt, I know you still have a ton of information, but I do want to leave the audience with a little bit of hope. You and I are both Christians. We have a worldview that has the victory of God programmed into it. But on the other hand, we're still living here as citizens in the United States, fighting for our own religious freedoms. I know this can be very overwhelming to people. You and I deal with this stuff all the time.
Right.
I talk about this stuff, not every week because we do a variety on this show, but every few weeks I talk about this kind of stuff. If somebody out there is feeling overwhelmed right now, what kind of advice would you offer them?
Well, you know, in all our lives, we just have to figure out, maybe answer this one question. Is it God or government? I mean, really, what do you want to put your faith in? If you want to put your faith in government, then you're falling right into their hands. I would rather put my faith in God, because all things are possible for those that love God or called according to his purposes.
And these government strategies that we're talking about have been tried again and again and again. They're always dismal failures. Never, ever do they result in anything but a dictatorship, a very strict, non-benevolent dictatorship.
I mean, all we have to do is, what is it? Who's the person that made the comment that if you don't study history, you're bound to repeat it?
History repeats itself all the time.
I mean, really, Bob has alluded to it. I mean, just look at Europe and where we are with Greece. Take a look at Russia, or the former Soviet Union.
Or even the Nazis. I mean, Nazis a bad, even a worse word than communism. Yeah. Some like the word. But what did the Nazis stand for? It was the National Socialist Party. The only difference between Hitler and Stalin is that Stalin was talking globally and Hitler was talking more about one country. But both were talking about redistribution of wealth. Both pitted rich against poor. Both were anti-Semitic, because sooner or later the rich people become the rich Jews. All Jews are rich. I'm Jewish. Would that that were true. That's my tax attorney.
Yeah, I can vouch.
He knows how much money I make. He knows what a rich Jew I am. But it's always those evil Jews, which we're starting to see in the Wall Street movement now. We're starting to see a lot of anti-Semitic signs. But, I mean, even this was even the birth of Nazism. It's not just Marxism. Nazism had all these same factors.
You know what? If it's an ism, it's connected some way to communism.
Well, careful, because you said you like capitalism.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay.
We could call that an ism, too.
We can call that an ism, too. Humanism, relativism,
God is an ism. There's no godism.
So where's my hope? I'll tell you. It tells us in Scripture that we're supposed to stand ready to give a reason for our hope. Here's my hope. My hope is this, that we serve a God who is all-powerful. I believe that the only choice for the United States is twofold. One is prayer. I believe that if we pray God, it says in 2 Chronicles, that he is more than willing to hear our prayers and hear our cries, and he will restore his people. The other thing I think along that same line is this: we have to start standing our ground. We really cannot compromise. We have this situation where the president of the United States is looking at somebody and saying, well, you won't compromise. Well, you know what? I'm not going to compromise if it violates something I believe.
And our president, by the way, doesn't compromise with anybody. His definition of bipartisanship is that the conservatives and Republicans should do things exactly his way. There's zero evidence that he ever compromises with anybody. Other than the fact that he goes on TV and gives a speech every day saying, I've been trying to work with these Republicans. I'm trying to work with them. Well, he keeps telling us that he's working with them, but that doesn't mean that's what he's actually doing. It just means he's telling us that.
Well, you know, and we got to blame the Republican Party, too. I mean,
they don't have a lot to brag about.
Yeah, they don't give solutions. They don't get options and alternatives.
And they do a horrible job of packaging their message.
Right.
They don't communicate it well at all.
But one of the things I think we're going to have to do for you people out there that are Christians or those people that believe in the Bible, what you need to do is you need to stand firm. We are called to be salt and light to this world. And if somebody doesn't do it, we're just given over control.
So your hope is pray while it's still legal to pray.
Yes.
And
yes.
Stand up for the right to pray and read the Bible.
Right. So let me give you guys like an overview. I know we talked about a lot of stuff and a lot of people. So we're going to sort of try and draw you a diagram. So if you guys can get a piece of paper, that would be totally great. We're going to put
unless you're driving. Don't start writing on the windshield.
Don't do that. But we're going to try and put this up on Bob's website.
Yeah, those of you that want to download, like, in a few days, this will be posted on my website. And when you go to download it, the, There'll be a place where you can read some text right while you're streaming the show. If you're streaming it, you can download it too. But if you're streaming it, you can actually look at this right on your screen while you listen to the stream. We'll have this diagram posted for you.
So here's what it sort of looks like, the overview, people. You guys are familiar that when we look in the Bible that somebody begets somebody else. So we're going to look at some begetting. And so the beginning is this. If you have a piece of paper, we're going to put it landscape sideways. And at the very bottom in the middle, you're going to put this name. And it's going to be Marx. M-A-R-K. Karl Marx started it all. Right above Marx, three on the far left side, I want you to put down Frankfurt School. Frankfurt School. In the middle, Fabian Society. And on the far right, Gramsci. G-R-A-M-S-C-I. Those are our three main players. Now, let's go back over to the Frankfurt. Right above Frankfurt, I want you to write these words. Political correctness. And you're going to put these above it. Multiculturalism. Moral relativism. Diversity. Keep that packaged together over there on the left. In the middle, right above the Fabian Society, write the word social justice. Go to the far right above Gramsci, write Alinsky. Above Alinsky, write the word acorn, A-C-O-R-N. Above that, put these two words, shared prosperity, illegal immigration.
And notice how there's a lot of nice-sounding phrases coined into some and couched with some not-so-nice-sounding phrases. That's part of the strategy, to change our speech and make it sound good.
And on the very top of your paper, I want you to write these words across the top. There are seven of them. Hollywood, nonprofits, media, labor, education, churches, and government. Now, right below that, what I want you to do is I want you to write this statement. Penetrating the institutions of influence. Change the people from within. If you just put that right below it, you can start drawing lines now to connect all the dots. From the Frankfurt School, you can connect that to education and media. You can connect it to Hollywood. You can connect it to churches. Social justice? Well, we can connect that to Hollywood. We can connect that to labor. We can also connect that to churches and government. On the right-hand side, shared prosperity, illegal immigration. Well, on that one, we have government. Two times. We have education. We have labor. We have nonprofits. And it goes on and on and on. People, whether we believe it or not, we've been sitting around and things have been happening all around us. And unfortunately, we've just been either too naive or unwilling to stand up for the rights that these people that we celebrate tomorrow on Memorial Day gave their lives for. And it's very, very unfortunate. And I think we in America have a window of opportunity, but it's closing fast.
And what a waste for all these millions of brave young men to have given their lives for this freedom that's just falling apart in front of us.
I'm going to leave you. We'll continue as long as we can go. But I want to give you guys two quotes, a couple quotes here. Now, this quote is actually from a guy named Norman Thomas. That may not mean much to you, but he ran six times for the United States presidential to be a president of the United States from the Socialist Party of America. Quote, this is what he said. The American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but under the name of liberalism, they will adopt every fragment of the socialist program until one day America will be a socialist nation without knowing how it happened.
Now, that day's not coming. That day is virtually here.
He said, I no longer need to run as a presidential candidate for the Socialist Party. The Democratic Party has adopted our platform. Believe this?
Well, he's saying it.
Yeah.
He's speaking the truth.
And here you go. And I don't know if this will be a shocker to anybody. The Communist Party of the United States has officially come out, and they are endorsing Barack Obama and the Democrats
in 2012. And as we mentioned earlier, one of his czars was Van Jones.
Yeah, Van Jones.
Who was admitting that he was a communist. He wasn't even using the word liberal or Democrat. He called it communist. And it's only because Glenn Beck started exposing his speeches on YouTube that they finally fired him. But He was not bashful about using that word at all.
No, not at all.
Well, Matt, always stimulating as always, and we'll have you back on again soon. And again, folks, as Matt said, there is hope, and your hope is in God. No matter what kinds of laws they pass, the Bible is full of stories. And even though we call them stories, they are historical events that actually happen, of people who kept their faith in God, even when they had to live under dictators, even when they were threatened with jail. So keep the faith. Keep the hope. Things could still be turned around. I don't think we're on a road without any turns yet. I do think we're getting close to that if we don't wake up. But history has shown us some wonderful revivals. But we've got to keep our heads about them. As a Christian, don't be suckered by words like compassion. Yes, God wants you to be compassionate, but he doesn't want you to blindly follow the Pied Piper just because the Pied Piper knows you like the word compassion, because sometimes the word compassion is all you're getting. And nothing really compassionate is coming out of it. But I'm compassionate enough to tell you that I'll be with you again next week. Have a good week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel, 1170 KCBQ.